Hello, and very warm welcome to this seminar's online recording. I'd like to talk to you today about some practical aspects of the new capital gains tax on UK residential property regime. As you'll know, in last year's Finance Act, there were some major changes introduced under which a 30-day window was brought in, which took effect from the 6th of April 2020, which was aimed at UK-based residential property, which was disposed of at a profit. And instead of the tax being payable on the normal 31st of January date, it was now going to be payable within 30 days of completion. And not only was the tax going to be payable, but also a return or account had to be submitted within that same 30-day period. Now, I'm not basically going to talk about the legislation. I'm sure you've had talks. Indeed, I've given you one some time ago on that very topic. But I was going to look at some of the practical aspects of how you go about reporting and paying this capital gains tax under these new 30-day rules. Basically, the 30-day window is aimed at taxable gains on UK-based residential property. And I would stress UK-based. Originally, the announcement was that it was going to cover residential property located anywhere in the world. So if, for example, I'd sold my holiday home in France, potentially that would come within the framework of these rules. But at the last minute, that got changed, I think, for probably very good and appropriate practical reasons. And as a result, we're only looking at UK residential properties. So what sort of properties might we specifically say these new rules are aimed at? Classically, of course, buy-to-lets, because they'll normally give rise to fully taxable capital gains, together with things like second homes and holiday homes, if they're based here in the UK. It strikes me also that if, for example, I have bought a house or flat which hasn't been occupied as my main residence throughout my period of ownership, that again, so even though it is my main residence, if it hasn't been occupied as by me as a main residence throughout that period of ownership, then again, there will be part periods when a chargeable gain would arise, and that too would be the subject of these 30-day rules. Although it's not spelled out in the legislation, there are a number of properties which HMRC do not consider to fall within this new regime. For example, if you only have a modest gain on a residential property that falls within your annual capital gains tax exemption. Currently $12,300. So if, of course, the property is jointly owned by me and my wife, then we might look at a gain of up to $24,600 as, if you like, falling outside the scope of these rules. Interspouse transfers, for pretty obvious reasons, as you all know, if it's an interspouse transfer from husband to wife or wife to husband, then in those circumstances, the asset goes across from one spouse to the other on an automatic no gain, no loss basis, and you never have a gain. Do remember, of course, that rule applies whether the property is given away or even sold for full market value. It's still automatically no gain, no loss. Gifts of residential properties to charities would not come within the ambit of these rules for the simple reason that that would, of course, be an exempt gift as far as that was concerned, and so would not give rise to a chargeable gain. And it also occurs to me that if, for example, I've acquired a property for development and resale, that too would not fall within these 30-day rules for the very simple reason that if a property is acquired for development and resale, any profit is subject to income tax rather than capital gains tax. Now, one of the concerning things that we had was that as we were starting to approach the 6th of April 2020, when these new rules were due to come in, there was very little indication on the HMRC website as to exactly how this new 30-day return or account was going to operate. Initially, we thought that perhaps a bit like the non-resident capital gains tax regime, which you may remember came in 5 years ago in 2015, that would be a special kind of tax return. But nearer the time, I think it was in about February of this year, it became clear that there was actually going to be a requirement to report the details online. So there wasn't as such going to be a special return. It was going to be done via a slightly different route. And what I'm really going to talk you through today is actually how you go about looking at this online arrangement. as I said, the website was extremely unclear and unspecific for quite a long time. And as we got quite close to the 6th of April 2020, I decided in an effort to find out exactly how things were going to work that I would be selling a residential buy-to-let of mine and would therefore, by putting that details into the revenue website, find out exactly what you've got to do. So that's precisely what I did. The first thing that they tell you that you've got to do is to create a capital gains tax on UK property account. It's not hugely different whether it is the vendor himself or herself who's doing this, or whether it is their advisor, their accountant or tax advisor doing it on their behalf. Either which way, it requires the owner to utilise their government gateway user ID and password. And so the first word of warning is that if, for example, you're doing this on behalf of a client, if the client does not have a government gateway user ID and password, clearly you've then got to create one. And that, remember, would take just a few days in those circumstances. Once you have got your capital gains tax on UK property account up and running, you are then allocated an account number. And if you have a look at the notes which accompany this talk, you will see a fairly long, I think it's about a 14-digit number that you will be allocated. And that then is your special CGT on UK property account number, which you should use. And obviously, having got that number, you then proceed to your account. And the purpose of going to the account, of course, is to answer the various questions that HMRC will then raise and provide the information that HMRC are then requesting so that, as far as one is concerned, you can build up a picture of what has gone on with the property. And the sort of details that you will need to have to hand in answering the revenues questions, most of them are fairly self-evident. For example, you have to provide the full address of the property together with its postcode, the date when the person acquired the property, the date when the contracts were exchanged for the sale of the property, the completion date, because remember, of course, that's going to be important because the return or account must be submitted and the tax paid within 30 days of that date. Obviously, the acquisition cost, the sale proceeds, together with the expenses of buying, selling, and improving those, the enhancement expenditure, if any has been incurred during your ownership of the property, all those have to be factored in order to work out the gain, along with any available tax release allowances or exemptions. So, for example, we might look at a property which for some of my period of ownership has been my main residence, but for some of it, it has been let out and it might attract letting relief. Letting relief, as I'm sure you're aware, has changed during the course of the current finance bill, soon to be Finance Act 2020, the rules for that. But if, for example, you've been sharing accommodation with tenants, it is still permissible, even after the 6th of April 2020, to claim lettings relief. And so obviously those sort of details need to be mentioned. In terms of exemptions, you probably, since you're disposing of the property during the tax year and doing this calculation before the end of the tax year, you would presumably utilise, if it's available, your annual capital gains tax exemption. And the like, for instance, be capital losses brought forward. So all those sort of factors need to be taken into account because that enables HMRC to build up a picture of the gain on the property that has just been disposed of and work out the capital gains tax payable that must be settled within that 30-day time limit. And I would mention at this stage, interest is always going to be charged on any late payments. So even in the current climate, at the moment, if someone was late in submitting their account details and paying their tax, they would always be charged with an amount of interest for late payment. But recently, there has been an announcement that says because of the COVID-19 crisis, no late filing penalties will be issued for transactions which were completed before the 6th of April 2020 and the 30th of June 2020 inclusive. In other words, if one is submitting details late outside the 30-day time limit, a late filing penalty in addition to interest can become payable for transactions completed on or after the 1st of July 2020. This recording is being made on the 24th of June. It strikes me that obviously because the coronavirus difficulties are continuing for the time being, although we're gradually starting to see some let-ups, that it is not impossible that that 30th of June deadline might be extended a little further. But at the moment, HMRC have clearly said later disposals completed after the 30th of June 2020 will receive late filing penalties if they're not reported within the 30 days. A small practical point to mention is that it is a good idea for vendors or their advisors to print out copies of the payment on account return for their records. The reason for this is that I discovered, as I was doing my practice run, that it does not appear to be possible to review or amend your details online. So in other words, if you've completed the information of your online account and it subsequently became necessary, perhaps because some of the figures are estimated or perhaps one of them turns out to be incorrect, to amend it, you cannot amend the information that you've already submitted online. It's necessary to contact HMRC directly to create any new amendment. And therefore, of course, it's very important to make sure that you do actually have a copy of what you've originally submitted to ensure that you've got the correct position in those circumstances. The final point that I would make, of course, is that even though you have submitted your online account, the vendor will still have to put in a normal self-assessment tax return, which may, of course, include some updated details of the property disposal and gain in those circumstances in their actual self-assessment return. The fact that, for example, you may have submitted your online account and it may even turn out to be absolutely spot on within the 30-day time limit does not relieve you from the obligation to submit a normal self-assessment tax return by the recognised 31st of January due date that you would normally expect. And obviously, in many occasions, what you will find is that maybe a further payment of capital gains tax or possibly a repayment of capital gains tax if it's been overpaid as a result of any amended details that you submit at that stage. Those, I think, are the main practical issues that you need to bear in mind. So I hope that has been helpful. Thank you for listening to this talk. My name is Robert Jamieson.